tackle the questions and bring us up to date is Fevzi Turkalp, who's the host of the Gadget Detective podcast. Fevzi, very Merry Christmas to you.
And Merry Christmas to you too. Good evening.
Evening. Lots to talk about. I think we're going to start with AI, which is two letters that we're increasingly hearing about. I think you need to really start at the beginning with AI and how it's going to take over our lives, apparently.
What it's going to do.
What does it even stand for, first of all?
Right, so artificial intelligence. Eventually, it will just be called intelligence. We won't... To call them artificial will be deemed to be discriminatory, but I guess that's another thing. Well, look, this has been a long time coming and there's still some way to go, but we can see now that a new revolution is coming. And unlike the Industrial Revolution, which did away with sort of tiers of manual work, AI will do away with jobs for individuals who are working in professions, let's say. So people like authors, poets,
artists. Radio presenters?
Oh, yeah.
And, seriously?
And, yeah, and Jake, I'm sorry to say it, but also producers. Absolutely. Lawyers, judges, doctors. Anything that can be... certainly anything that can be rules-based or has experience based on a lot of cases. So there has been for some time now. I mean, IBM have got something called Watson, which is something, it's an AI, an artificial intelligence program that can be trained in many different areas. So Watson has done everything from creating new recipes, combining tastes that human beings had never thought of to combining into completely new, you know, dishes, through to diagnosing cancer patients from scans. There's some contention about this, but some say with greater accuracy and reliability than the most experienced consultants. And it does make me think about, you know, what one deems to be, you know, intelligence. So if one's to talk about artificial intelligence, one, you know, first has to define intelligence. And, you know, it seems to me that we constantly define these things that we hold to be unique to us in such a way as to exclude the other, to exclude the machine. So we used to say, if you could teach a computer to play chess, then that would be intelligent. And then it was taught to play chess. And they said, oh, well, then if it can beat a human, then it's intelligence. So then it beat a human. Then they said, well, if it can beat a grandmaster, then it's intelligent. So then it beat the grandmaster. And they said, well, actually, chess is not actually a very good indicator of intelligence. And then they started talking about other things. You've got the idea that if you can converse with an AI and not know it's an AI, then it's intelligent. And the reason why I'm sort of drawn to it today is that we had something called ChatGPT come out. And that is kind of special because it's available. You can actually try it. I've actually got it open in a browser tab at the moment. And you can just set it tasked. And I did this one just before. If you don't mind, I said, please write a poem about broadcaster Clive Bull.
Uh-oh.
I know. I'm asking for trouble. He's been on LBC radio for as long as I can remember, and is even working Christmas Day to bring cheer to his listeners. He is occasionally joined by technology expert Fevzi Turkalp, and literally within 5 seconds out popped this poem.
Wow.
And it says, Clive Bull, a man of the air, bringing cheer to all who hear. His voice a comforting sound. To those lost, he is a beacon found. On LBC Radio, he's a fixture, sorry about that, bringing news, opinions and mixture. Of topics always with care, he's a broadcaster beyond compare. Fevzi Turkalp, a technology expert, joins him on the air, adding perspective to discussions of gadgets and trends. Their rapport, a friendship that never ends. On Christmas Day, Clive works with glee, bringing joy and cheer to you and me. A true professional, he never fails to entertain and inform with tales. So here's to Clive Bull, a man of the hour, bringing light and laughter to this festive hour. We thank you all for all that you do. Merry Christmas, Clive, and a Happy New Year too.
Well, it's very accurate. Certainly, I'll give you that. And if it could read it as well, then we wouldn't even need to.
Well, you know, I could just as easily do text to speech and read this out.
Literally was written in seconds.
Yeah, it literally took about 4 seconds. I also asked it to write an introduction to a Christmas Day radio show. But why don't we just put a test to it? Why don't you set it a task? It can write poems, stories. It can pontificate.
Wow.
It can do many things.
Yeah.
Why don't you give it a go? Just tell me what you like.
Why don't we get a listener to suggest a challenge?
Oh, that would be fun.
If you want to maybe text in with it, and we'll do it later on.
Yep,
so
absolutely.
Text in with a challenge for this, what would you call it?
This one's ChatGPT.
ChatGPT, which is a kind of artificial intelligence. Getting lots of comments in on this, by the way. Sarah says, why the rush to do away with humans in jobs? It's only going to benefit a smaller and smaller pool of people. Humans should be using their brains.
Yeah.
Another one here, Patrick says, are we teaching people enough about robotics? Should this be introduced to very young people? Maybe so. Certainly, very young people now learn about coding, don't they?
Yeah. I mean, the thing about why we're doing this is it's a bit like an arms race. So there is commercial arms race and the use of AI within that and literally the military arms race. So in terms of commerce, if you run a business and your business does not take advantage of this technology and does not adopt it, then it will be outperformed by its competitors, and those businesses will cease to exist. So, for example, you may have been the finest purveyor of horse-drawn carriages, but if you ignored, the internal combustion engine, then you are a footnote in commercial history. Similarly, when it comes to military endeavors, the idea of having robot soldiers, of having AI driven weapons that can not only kill but make the kill decision themselves, mean it's highly attractive to, you know, one of the things that ends wars is when too many body bags come home, and if a particular regime thinks that it can make an endless army of soldiers, for example, and advance weapons, then just as with nuclear weapons, where people, you know, had them because other people had them, then in the same way that we will develop AI. There's never been a technology that we have invented that we haven't used, you know, and this is that.
It's there, so it's going to be used.
And some people say it's the last invention that human beings will ever make, which you can see is ominous or not ominous, but
there's an awful lot of people texting in saying, could we replace the government with this? Such as Paul in Bedfordshire says, we should use AI to run the government and managing the species out of the madness you've fallen into. Imagine water, food, energy being managed to the betterment of all life on Earth, managing ourselves towards survival and progress.
Yeah, and of course, it then depends on what the parameters you set are, doesn't it? I mean, assuming that it can do that, are the parameters that you set to make the best outcome, and for whom? Because just as we have political parties who arguably try and have the best outcomes for certain sectors of society, you could have an AI that just does that more efficiently. The technology is not inherently good or evil. It can just do it more efficiently. So
who's in charge of the technology? That's the question.
Yeah, and who watches the watchers as well? I mean, it is dangerous stuff. I mean, Stephen Hawking, the late Stephen Hawking, famously described it as an existential threat to humanity, which is true, I believe. And his advice was that we should get off the planet and run.
Wow.
There's something to be said for that. I think Elon Musk has said something similar.
Nick has just texted in saying, well, this has gone dark quickly. Yes, hasn't it? We're going to take a quick break and then we're going to come. We've got loads of questions coming in. So we're going to do some questions in a moment. Fessy Turkup's with me. It's LBC and coming up to 9:15. And we are talking technology. Fessy Turkup is with me. We were demonstrating something called ChatGPT. Kathy from Oxford says, ChatGPT made it onto Nick Abbott's A to Z last night. A caller from Cologne who works in the cloud called it in. I suppose, what was it, C for ChatGPT? If we're going to demonstrate how that works again. It wrote a little poem earlier on. If you'd like to set a challenge, something it could write, then just text me quickly with that challenge, and we'll do it later on. 84850. Let's take some questions now on technology. And Ralph's in Crouch End. Hello, Ralph.
Hello there, Clive and Pepsi.
Hi.
I like to ask, because I'm a blind person, and the only internet device I've got is Alexa, but it can't. But it's only got very limited internet capability.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for example, I would like to be able to send. I'd like to be able to send and read it and read emails. I mean, it doesn't allow me to do that.
No. So, if you're a smartphone user. Then you've got some options there. Both Apple with its iOS and iPadOS operating systems and Google's Android systems both have very good what are called accessibility options. They have the ability to read screens. They have the ability to be controlled by voice as well. Both are good. My opinion is the Apple one is a little bit better, but both are quite usable. And then you've got different systems. You've got a system on desktop PCs called JAWS as well, which can help with this sort of issue as well. Do you have a device of that sort at the moment?
Well, I've got a device with limited internet capability, but I've got a phone with limited internet capability, but I wouldn't have a clue to find. If there's an accessibility program there, I wouldn't have a clue how to access it.
Yeah, so I would, it depends on your budget, because, I mean, Apple iPhones are not cheap, although a lot of those, have you got Wi-Fi at home? Or
I do have Wi-Fi at home.
You've got Wi-Fi. So one option might be, instead of going for the phone, you could get one of the cheaper iPads for a little over £300. I know that's still a lot of money. But the reason I mentioned that is that the support of the Apple stuff, and I'm not here to push Apple stuff, they have plenty of faults, but in this particular regard, hats off to them, the support is better. So for one thing, if you feel safe to do it, you can go into an Apple store and they will talk you through it, they will set it up for you.
My problem, I mean, somebody did try to train me on an Apple device, but my problem is always touch screen. I can't find things on the touch screen device.
No, well, that's true, and that will be the true of all smartphones. But the point is, once they are set up correctly, you do not have to use. You're not put to trying to touch buttons on the screen. You can control it by voice, and you can have it read to you what your options are on the screen. So you can do everything you need to do. You can literally control everything on an iPhone and an Android phone by voice, but it has to be set up. And for that, you're better off with Apple, just because they will set it up for you in store and take you through it. And also, when you buy a new device, you get a setup appointment for free over the phone as well. And then you get Apple Care, where you can ring them with any small problem. And again, with Apple Care, what they can do, and I don't generally recommend this to people, but if you're sure you're through to Apple, you can let them take control of your device and do setup for you remotely as well. So let's say something is set up but you inadvertently knock one of the settings out of kilter, you can have it reset for you, and they will be delighted to help you. I've sort of put people in their direction in the past and who've had very good experiences.
Well, that sounds good. Good luck with it, Ralph. Thank you very much for that. Let's go to Jerry in Burton-on-Trent. Hello, Jerry.
Merry Christmas, both. Hope you have a lovely time.
Thank you, and you.
Thank you. Fancy, just wondered if you could give us a bit of advice about OLED televisions, because I'm very tempted to buy one. The sad thing is, though, although a level of technology, I was alerted recently about power rating, about how much of an additional cost is it on my fuel or energy bill, because someone said they're about 300 watts worth of power to run those things, and normally we put the telly on and we don't give it a second thought. Would I be wise in going for one, or go for the Ultra HD or whatever they call it?
Yeah. Okay, so with OLED, OLED stands for Organic LED. It's a technology which is different to traditional LED TVs and screens, in that with traditional ones, the little pixels make the colours, but you have a backlight that shines through it that gives it, the projection of the image from the TV. With OLED, they produce their own light. There's no backlight to them. So the benefit of that is you get a fantastic contrast ratio. That's to say the blacks are really black and the whites are really white, and you get far greater, again, what's called dynamic range, the number of steps from black to bright white. So that means if you're looking in an area, let's say you're watching a film, I don't know, one of those great escape films, they're doing a tunnel escape or something, and all you hear on most TVs is you just hear their voices, you can't see anything, it's all too dark. But with an OLED TV you can do that. It will depend, the power consumption will depend upon the actual model you choose, and of course the screen size as well. The more modern OLEDs are more energy efficient. But you're right to point out, because TV sets, because they tend to be left on for large periods of time, are one of the major consumers of electricity. So you have to, look up the specs of the individual machine, because it will depend on many factors. Being OLED or not is only one factor amongst many of the overall electricity draw. Then make sure that, it depends how sophisticated you want to get. There are TVs out there, I think Samsung do one, where if you stop moving in front of the TV, it'll assume that you've fallen asleep and turn itself off, or that you've left the room. So there's ones with cameras that watch you and do that sort of thing. So if you're given to falling asleep in front of a television, then one of them with that feature may be good as well. The other thing to bear in mind just with OLEDs is that they still do have this problem of etching. And what that is if you have, let's say you watch a news channel a lot, and it's got the logo in the same place on the TV screen all the time. If you left it on that, for extended periods of time, eventually it may etch permanently onto the screen, such that even when the TV is off, you can actually see that. And it's, warranties, you have to be careful, because warranties often exclude that problem, because it's innate to the OLED technology. In addition to that, you've got other technologies from other manufacturers like QLED, which has some of the benefits of OLED, but is cheaper and doesn't have the problem with etching as well. So
all right.
There's a lot to consider there, but specifically for your question about energy consumption, you just need to check the specs, because you can't just say it's high because it's OLED. It will be many factors.
Great question, Jerry. Thank you very much for that. Let's go to May in Liverpool. Hello, May.
Hiya.
Hi. What can we do for you?
So it's just that I'm blind in the backs of my eyes. It's an old person disease.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 92, and I can't use my computer or my phone or anything anymore now.
Is it you've got peripheral vision?
It's fairly bad vision, yeah.
Yeah.
Partially sighted.
Right. I mean, it is difficult.
I just wondered, is there anything I can get to help me get back to the computer? Because I can't do no paying of my bills online. I've got to rely on people.
What sort of computer do you have?
An HP laptop.
Okay, so it's a Windows laptop.
Yeah.
Okay, so there are programs. I mentioned one just earlier. There's a program called JAWS, JAWS, which is available, which is effectively is a screen reader. It will read everything on the screen of your Windows laptop. You can get that. If you contact RNIB, I think Royal National Institute of the Blind, I think it is. If you contact them, they will point you in the right direction. There's quite a lot of information there. If you don't have a number for them, I will find one for you, and if you want to, I can pass it to you through the station perhaps.
We can do that.
I can get you a number for them, but essentially there are software tools available that you can run on your computer that will read to you what's there, and also allow you to speak into it what you want to type. Paying bills and so forth, it can be done. We also talked about the fact that you can do it on things like tablets and smartphones as well. So that's another option for you. But there's definitely, things are a lot better than they were, I mean, it's still not easy, of course.
Yeah. What about magnifying things up? Would that help me? If it was made bigger, or you could magnify the screen somehow?
Potentially. I mean, you can do that. I mean, again, there are accessibility settings in Windows and also in Mac OS. You can magnify it. You can also change the colours. Certain colours give rise to better contrast. So it depends. You know, if someone, for example, has got age-related macular degeneration, they'll have lost much, if not all, of the central vision, but they'll be left with a peripheral vision as well. And for each type of blindness, that there can be different things that will help. But again, it's a question of trying to get someone to help set it up for you. But you know, I think, you know, there are charities that will help deal with this.
We've got a number, so I'm going to pass May back and see if we can pass that on as well.
Okay,
I hope that helps. May, thank you very much. Interesting question.
Yeah.
Lots of people coming up with suggestions for what we might get the AI, the chat thing to do. Various things about redoing the King's Christmas message. I don't think we'll do that one.
That's a good idea, though. I might do that one privately myself.
Philip says, could the AI system write a definitive law of quantum gravity? Probably not. Chris and Paul in Wales say, could the AI compose a Christmas carol or song? I guess that might be a possibility.
Yep, could do.
Others asking, can it write a joke? Has it got a sense of humour? Could it write a joke if we gave it some ingredients?
I dare say we could try.
Give it a try.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll do that. We'll just read a few more ideas as they come in, and we'll see. Nigel here says, I want a cheap but robust smartphone for about £100. Is there such a thing?
Yeah, I would say, so obviously we're not talking about iPhones, so we're talking about Android phones. I would say just one of the entry-level Samsungs is a good place to start, because Samsung make their own screens and their own processors, and there's a lot of trickle-down. So they make a lot of the technology that go into iPhones, but they also then trickles down into their, not only their flagship machines, but also lower down. So I would say just any of the entry-level Samsungs would be good. I in the past I recommended some of the LG ones, but unfortunately they don't make them anymore. So I would say just look at the entry level Samsungs, and you could even spend less than £100. The Nokias are also good value for money as well. Nokia is not the same company as it was. It sort of got bought. Another company bought the rights to the name, but they've been making good Android phones for a number of years as well. So some of the basic Nokias are good value as well.
Great. Till 10 o'clock, and we're talking technology in this hour. If you have a question or a point, do get in touch. You can call the usual number. You can text 84850. And here with me is Fevzi Turkalp, host of the Gadget Detective podcast. Lots of questions coming in. Let me throw a few more of these at you. Now, this one from Victoria in Stamford, I think I can answer this one, but you might want to have a go first. She says, how do they detect the radio listening figures? Can they tell that my radio is listening to LBC?
So I think, Clive, you'll know more about this than me. I mean, I know that radio stations actually employ an organisation called Radar to give them very detailed statistics of listenership by TV show and even by hour, I believe. Those statistics are published, or at least a summary of them are published at rajar.co.uk, rajar.co.uk. So you can see, you know, BBC and commercial stations side by side there. As to how they do it, that's interesting. I mean, these days, you know, if you're listening via an internet stream, be it on a smart speaker or via websites or a, you know, radio like that, then obviously they can measure it. Otherwise, I don't know, do they use sample audiences that they poll?
Basically, yes. It is basically a survey of thousands and thousands of people, all demographically selected right across the country. And it's a continuous survey. You get a little diary and you fill it in. Mm. I think I'm right in saying that some people do it online now. You tick boxes of what you listen to, and that's the basis of it. But you are quite correct that also you can. This is not included in, as I understand, it's not included in the listening figures. But also you can detect who's listening online to a certain extent, because people now have these gadgets, smart speakers and that sort of thing. So we can tell if there are lots of listeners downloading or uploading or whatever it is, LBC at the time. I guess you can tell that, but that's not incorporated into official figures at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's basically a bit like a political poll, but on a very large scale.
Sure. But I think that in the future that will change. We'll move away from that sort of polling-based solution to a technical measurement. As we're already seeing that with podcasts and live streams and so forth, because you can literally see, you know, how many people have downloaded it and how far they've listened into it and everything. You get very granular information.
And it's the same with TV, streaming TV things, isn't it? Now I get a little email saying, why did you stop watching this film after 20 minutes? And don't forget you can watch the end of this series. And so they know exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, and it's quite interesting because if you don't use, you know, people like Google have the ability to measure this sort of thing very greatly, and therefore, you know, a lot of people will advertise via Google, and to an extent the likes of Google are killing the advertising market for everybody else, because they can provide that breakdown, which is very specific. So it's not just how many are listening, but the profile of the people that are listening. So if you've got a very narrow audience for your product, you can now target that money very specifically, and that's to the detriment of more conventional broadcast media.
And there's also a gadget which I think has been tried out in this country and is used in America sometimes, where you wear a little gadget like a wristwatch, and it will monitor any sound in the vicinity and match it up to anything that might be on the radio.
Yeah,
and it can sort of snoop on you and work out what you're listening to at any one time, and that's a different way of collecting it, but that's again not used by the official figures. Another point here from Gaz says, AI, it's like Battlestar Galactica with the Cylons. It's all happened before and it will happen again. I'm trying to joke, but it's rather frightening. The late Stephen Hawking is right. We need to get off the planet and run.
Well, you know, it's not good to be a one planet species anyway, frankly.
Right. <You know? laughs> Well, maybe this is why all these tech billionaires are spending their money on space exploration.
Yeah, and what a shame that some of them are now wasting their obvious talents on some meaningless frippery. But, you know, never mind.
Well, meaning Twitter. Oh.
Well, can you hear the frustration that I've had to report on this individual since he who shall not be named? I've had to report on him since April.
Yes.
With things that just really aren't that important except for that.
No, and yet it's become a dominant tech story of the year, really, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's become like a soap opera. And there are so many more important things that, one, that we should be talking about, and two, that he should be doing with his time and obvious talents and money.
Toby says, could you ask the AI to explain the football offside rule? That might be a bit of a long answer, I think, that one. yes, producer says, let's not do that. No, we won't. Hello, I need advice on where to buy a replacement remote for my Samsung TV. You can get those fairly easily, can't you?
Well, yeah, so you can either, there's two approaches you can take to that. You either get an original Samsung part, or there are many companies like One For All, who's a brand that produce remote controls that will work on any number of TVs. You just have to enter a code in it and it becomes the remote for that TV. So each TV set has a particular, I think it's a 4-digit code that you enter, and then it becomes that TV's remote control. Sometimes it even adds additional functions. So if you can't track it down, I mean, you can either find new or used. I mean, you can try on places like Amazon, but also on eBay, but just, you know, Be careful.
I mean, he's quoted, I say he, this person has quoted the model number. I think if you just type that into something like eBay or Amazon, you will find a remote control replacement. I've done that several times.
Yeah, and sometimes one trick is if you go into Google and you actually do it in quotation marks as well, so you get the literal thing, but then you won't get all those random entries that have got some part of what you're looking for in the title. But as I say, One For All, I think it's ONE number 4 ALL, they make some very good replacement remotes as well.
Okay, Julius in Weybridge. Hello, Julius.
Evening, Clive and guests.
Evening.
And, Merry Christmas. Thank you for Christmas Day entertainment. You had a caller just now who was interested in a smartphone for a budget price, and it just occurred to me, I'm wondering whether you intentionally didn't consider a refurbished option, which I've used the last few years. I mean, the obvious drawback is I'm a model or two behind, but are there technical reasons or other reasons that you've not considered refurbished value options, please?
Yes. It's not something that I personally would look at, and it's for this reason. Each year, phones at any particular price point are getting more capable. So a phone that might have cost £200 when new 2 years ago that might be selling refurbished for £100, you could buy a new phone, a current new phone for £100 that would have similar functionality, sometimes even better. So where you've got a market where the technology is still improving, and admittedly mobile phone improvements have slowed down recently, but still, where you've got something where it's improving year by year, so bigger screen, brighter screen, more memory, faster processor, you know, whatever it is that they're improving, by getting refurbished, you're not necessarily getting a more performant device. All you're getting is a device that's used. And the other thing is that mobile phones, by their nature, are prone to wear and tear, which is not always visible when you buy it.
Yeah. Yeah?
And it's more, you know, it's more prone to suffer failures if it's not a new device. And of course, you know, the warranty can be more limited as well. You tend to get shorter warranties. I mean, there are exceptions to the refurbished rule. I mean, Apple stuff, for example. I've bought refurbished Apple things myself, and they're indistinguishable from new. But their idea of refurbishment is to completely, you know, if there's even a little nick on the case, you'll have a whole new case, or if there's an imperfection on the screen, you'll have a whole new screen. It is, to all intents and purposes, new.
Well, that's why I mentioned it. That's what I've bought, and I found their warranties good as well on secondhand.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So and the reason I'm...
value.
Yeah, so the reason I mentioned that is because they are the exception. Other company, you see, it all depends. Refurbish is a very woolly word, and some sellers or resellers think that just sort of cleaning it up and, you know, charging up the battery, it makes it refurbished. And of course, you see, the other thing is, how many recharge cycles has the internal battery gone through, if you're talking about a smartphone? Because, you know, after a few hundred recharge cycles, it's no longer holding 100% charge.
I found that problem with the new models, frankly. So,
well, there is that, but you know, if your phone goes below 80% in the first year, you'd probably be able to do something about it under the warranty. Whereas if it's a refurb, well, again, it depends where you buy it from, because some companies will just replace the internal battery as well. But depends who it is. If it's a very reputable reseller or seller, then that can be fine. It's just that the benefits of it, for the reasons I said at the outset, can be more limited. So unless you've got a real bargain there, you know, then buying new can be a better solution, because there's amazing phones for even £50 now. Quite incredible in terms of what they will do.
All right, Julius, thank you very much. 0345 6060 973. Could you get your chatbot to write a Christmas cracker joke about a robot?
Shall we do it?
Is that a possibility? Shall we try that one?
Yeah. So I'll just write a Christmas cracker.
This is a live demonstration of...
About a robot, yeah?
Okay.
I don't know what it's going to do.
Okay, let's see what it does.
Okay.
You typed it in. What do you do? Just press go.
I've just hit enter. Okay, it's done it.
Go on then.
That's not a very good joke.
is it readoutable?
Yeah, it's just not
go
very
on,
funny.
Go
why was the robot feeling depressed at Christmas?
Go on.
Because his circuits were all tied up in knots. I'm going to regenerate the answer, because I didn't like that one.
Okay. Not too bad.
It sounds really like one of my jokes. Why couldn't the robot open his Christmas present? Because it was sealed with tape. That's not funny.
I think the human race is going to be fine, actually, judging by the success of this. They're not quite ready to take over yet.
Yeah, yeah. I think humour is lost.
There you are. I've just actually generated... the missing ingredient. Got another one?
Yep, yep, go. Oh, no, none of them are funny. Honestly, I don't want to share these.
Okay.
Yeah.
Somebody here asking, could you get it to write a limerick about Jeremy Clarkson? I think we've had enough of Jeremy Clarkson. Thank you. A love poem in the style of Keats. That's, yeah. I'm sure we could do all of these things. A heartfelt song in the style of Bob Dylan. I also like the idea of rewriting the King's Speech, but I understand it might not be doable.
You know, the funny thing is I did that in the break.
Okay, is it... I'll tell you what, hold on, we'll see if we can read it out after the break. LBC, I'm Clive Bull with you till 10. We're talking technology. Fevzi Turkalp is with me, and we've been testing out some artificial intelligence, something called ChatGPT, is that right?
Yep.
Okay, so we tasked it with writing an alternative King's Christmas message, and I have now had this sent to me so I can read it out. It's not too long, so and I won't do the voice, obviously, and I do want to make this clear. This was written by AI, but interestingly, somebody texted when we were discussing this as a topic earlier on and said, well, fill in the dots. This could have been written by a computer. So anyway, here we are. This is the AI version. It says, "Dear fellow citizens, as we gather today on this joyous holiday, I want to extend my warmest wishes to you all. Christmas is a time for celebration, for coming together with loved ones and reflecting on the past year. As we look back on the events of the past year, I'm filled with gratitude for all that we've achieved. Despite the challenges and difficulties we've faced, we've remained united and strong. I'm also grateful for the love and support of my family, who've been a constant source of comfort and joy. I'm blessed to have such wonderful wife, children, extended family. And I'm grateful for the love and support they've given me. As we look ahead to the new year, I'm filled with hope and optimism. I believe that with hard work and determination, we can overcome any obstacle and achieve great things. So let us celebrate this festive season with joy and hope in our hearts. Let us be grateful for all that we have, and let us look to the future with confidence and optimism. Merry Christmas to you all, and a happy and prosperous new year." Yeah. Well, you see, it's not bad, is it?
Yeah.
And a little bit of tweaking here and there, include this fact and that fact, you could have a scriptwriter there.
Yeah, an olive branch to Harry in there, I think.
Yeah, well, I thought so, yes.
Yeah, more than in
more
the real
so than
speech.
The actual one, yes. Let's have a quick call from Valerie in Crowborough. Hello, Valerie.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I've got an old Nokia that I've had for a long time, but I've got a computer at home and everything, but when I want to pay as you go, then the contract now says that whether you use the phone or not, that, let's say I topped it up for £10, it just goes anyway.
Mm. So, it expires automatically?
Yes.
Whether you use it or not?
Yes.
Yeah.
So some of them have credits that you get a certain number of credits every month, but if you don't use them by the end of the month, and that can be credits for minutes or it can be text messages, for example, if you don't use them by the end of the month, you lose them. There are deals that you can get where you can carry them forward, either indefinitely or at least for 2 or 3 months. But eventually, you know, you will tend to lose them. There are one, or two, I think there's one that does, there's one that uses the O2 system, and I can't remember the name of the company. There's one that uses O2 that actually will let you keep them indefinitely, because I remember I put them on a family member's phone. If that name comes to me, I will...
Keep listening, Valerie. We'll come back to you with a name if it comes to us. Or somebody will text in with it. But it is fairly normal for those to expire otherwise. Alan from Kent says, "Now we all have smart TVs and use apps to watch programmes. How long before the adverts we see in between programmes are tailored to the user?" I think that's beginning to happen already.
Yeah. I think the technology to do that is already there. It's a question of whether we want that to happen. We already see it in terms of our internet browsing. You know, they have cookies that track you across the internet. So you go onto one website and you look at a bicycle that you're interested in buying, and then you go to a completely unrelated website and you see an advert for the very same bicycle. And that's because the first website has placed a little cookie, a little packet of information on your system, which is then read by future websites that you visit. And, you know, it could easily do that. I think the reason why we're not seeing more of it is because it will just basically freak people out a little bit. So if they targeted advertising at you based on what they really fully know about you, I think you'd find it quite creepy.
Yeah, well, I already do. As you say, they already do that on the internet.
Yeah.
But I think that is coming, certainly, to streaming television.
That's Google's whole business model.
Yeah.
You know, that's exactly how they make their money.
Let's take a question from Dave in Harrow. Hello, Dave.
Hi, Clive. I've just got a question. I don't know if your guy there can answer this. About a couple of months ago, simultaneously, I lost all internet, all email capability on my phones. I've got to say, I'm a bit of a Luddite. I still use older technology. Mm-hmm. And the likes of Opera Mini Browser, I was able to get Gmail on the webmail. And I also was able to get mail.com on via an email client called Logic Mail, which you can use on Blackberries using a POP or IMAP settings. But both of those are now inoperable. And I gather that all the email, the main providers, have switched to this thing called PGP security. So, you know, which is pretty much ruling out anybody like me or who wants to be not on the cutting edge of technology. Interestingly, I can still get email on my Nokia Lumia, which is a Windows platform. But I just wondered if you knew any email, I don't know if you call them client or provider, that still uses the older, preferably a free one, the older tech.
I don't know. I mean, have you tried accessing Gmail from the browsers that you actually use?
Yeah, I can't do it from Opera Mini anymore. I used to be able to get it via email, webmail.
Right.
I used to just go to gmail.com. I don't know whatever they've done. I think I'm reading somewhere they've switched in. Switched to HTML5 or something. But I don't know.
I mean, I think the only thing, there will be limitations on this because there does come a point where, for a variety of reasons, and security can be one of them, that companies need to move forward with the products they provide to sort of lock them down. These older operating systems on the older devices are inherently insecure, by and large, because they were not designed with security in mind. It's a very different climate now to what it was when those devices were new and current. You could try to see if there's any other browsers available on your devices that might allow it. For example, Chrome will run on some quite the Chrome browser will run on some quite old devices, and that should, once you're into Chrome, it should then allow you access to Gmail, as an example. But beyond that, I would say that, I mean, you've obviously put a lot of thought and learning into it, you know, from the way you've just described the problem. I would say that, you know, unless there's a particular reason why you're wedded to those older devices, I would spend even £50 on a new Android smartphone and do it that way, you know.
You say that, but I mean, I really like the real keyboard, the QWERTY keyboard, and, you know, I appreciate Tux phones have got large screens, but I get, you know, sometimes the thing is trying to figure out, nobody hits the keys correctly, you know, the virtual keyboard, and it's sort of guesstimating what word you mean and it getting it wrong. And I really like the real keyboard on the Blackberries.
Yeah, but then again, the technologies continue to improve. So, for example, I use smartphones and touchscreen devices all the time. I very rarely type at the keyboard. I will use voice entry. And the voice dictation, particularly on Android devices, more so than Apple, the Android's voice dictation is supreme. And therefore, the solution may be, well, you don't have to put up with any sort of keyboard at all. You can speak your message and at most have to edit it a bit if there's a misrecognition somewhere along the way. But Google's voice recognition is second to none. So I would say that, you know, sometimes we think, we sort of, when we think about a problem, we think about it with a narrow view, but sometimes there's a better way to solve the problem. And the way that we're communicating with our devices now is increasingly through speech and not through any sort of keyboard. The other thing I would say to you is just briefly, you also have the option of attaching a physical Bluetooth keyboard to a lot of devices, and then you could do it that way. You could even have a slightly bigger folding keyboard that unfolds.
All right. Good, Dave. Thank you very much. Glad we squeezed you in. Various people coming up with answers to your calls not expiring on a mobile phone. And it seems like there are a few. So there's three network. Several people are saying three network. Mm-hmm. Pay as you go. We'll do that. The credit doesn't expire monthly. GIFGAF, several people are saying, mm-hmm. including Liz and Paul. Yep. And John in Cardiff says Asda on Vodafone, which I didn't know was a thing, but it is, have credit that doesn't expire as long as you use some mobile data or one call or text once every 180 days, your credit won't expire. So,
sure.
Good
so
news.
The one I was thinking of, by the way, was Tesco, which uses the O2 network.
Oh, okay.
So it's a virtual network. And that one, I've seen credits last literally
plenty
for years.
Out there then. Great. Yeah. Well, we're out of time. Fevzi, brilliant as ever for all that advice. Thank you very much indeed. And hopefully you won't be replaced by a robot next time we speak. Fevzi Turk out there, a host of Gadget Detective Podcast.